A vast new cloud, chiplet races, Runecast got caught, storage and compute together, and Juniper's putting AI in everything in this week's episode of the Gestalt IT Rundown. Hi everyone, it's January 31st, 2024, and I'd like to wish my wife a very happy birthday. I am Tom Hollingsworth, and I am here on National Hot Chocolate Day. So if you want to enjoy a nice, creamy treat, don't do Brussels sprouts, because it's also a National Brussels Sprout Day. But joining me is a connoisseur of all things fine and wonderful in the tech world, my co-host, Max Mortiaro. Max, welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome back.
I'm glad to have you here. Steven's actually out doing Cloud Field Day this week, so I said I need to get my friend Max on here because we're going to have some fun. We've got a lineup of stories that has some, you know, twists and turns, maybe some talk about chips, some talk about storage, and of course, there's networking news, so I would love to talk about that. But we're going to start out with some of our friends over at Vast Data because they are partnering up to make AI more efficient. The partnership is with Genesis Cloud, which is a large IaaS provider of cloud GPUs and accelerators. Genesis is saying that they're going to be using Vast Data's platform to help build out AI data services for things like large language model LLM development. The addition of Vast Data to the Genesis offerings means a more robust data layer that can help scale with customer needs. Max, how is Vast Data helping Genesis sell more AI?
Well, Tom, I think Vast Data is very well placed to support in those areas very simply by looking at the intrinsic capabilities of their platform. They've architected a platform which is intended for, you know, high ingest, high performance, you know, data handling, and obviously that plays perfectly into the kind of, you know, workloads characteristic of LLMs and whatever is AI related. That's the first thing. The second thing is that putting aside those, you know, technical considerations, Vast has been working on adding capabilities to their platform. So in the sense of kind of data services or things which layer on top of delivering base storage capabilities. So they've been adding the Vast data store to handle unstructured data management. There's data space, database. So they're really adding a lot of features which make it very simple to manage the data. So moving away, if you will, from just putting data on a volume or on a share or whatever, but really going above and beyond to start really managing data itself, basically delivering more value to the end users. So I think that's where they're helping in that sense, in my opinion. So one for me getting, as you were saying before, in the chips and chiplet races and so on. So the chip battles are heating up again, this time around interconnects. TSMC and TSMC and Samsung are looking to commercialize the Universal Chiplet Interconnect Express, or UCIe, standard to help ease design and implementation challenges. UCIe is primarily focused on chiplets, as the name suggests, as more and more companies are using the design methodology to reduce costs and help design new units faster. Both of the major manufacturers in the linked article are racing to implement the standard in their production lines, sometimes in the first half of 2024, in order to gain not only a first mover advantage, but also to help direct the future of chip manufacturing. Tom, what's going on with that?
This basically is a race to see who gets to decide how the standard's going to be implemented. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, that's not very important, what standard is Intel using? Go on, look it up. I'll wait. Spoiler alert, I will not be waiting because Intel's using their own standard. UCIe is basically what we're trying to do to say that we're going to use a universal interconnect. But right now, let's just say we're going to go with Intel for their chiplet design stuff. Well, when you design your chip that uses chiplets, you design it to Intel's fab process, which means you use their interconnects, which means you are going to basically be bowing down to however they want to do it. With TSMC and Samsung, what they're hoping is that by being the first person to implement UCIe, you use their flavor of it. Now, coming from a networking background, I'm going to tell you a little dirty secret of the standards process. They're not really standards. Every implementation of a given standard has its own flavor, like French vanilla or golden vanilla or plain vanilla. What you're actually getting is something that is mostly there with maybe a couple of little extra pieces. And it's ironic that the couple little of extra pieces is in something as small as chiplets, because UCIe is basically designed to allow the interconnects between all of those chiplet pieces to kind of be more efficient. So I can use different memory transfer bandwidths and things like that, or I can incorporate this entirely different line without having to worry about basically wiring everything up in a very specific way. So it means I can pick and pull parts that I want. So let's just say, for example, if I end up with a run of certain memory accelerators that I need to put into a certain design for, I don't know, like an automotive system, I can do that without having to completely redesign the entire chip and slow down my fab process. That's hugely valuable because it means that my production lines become more efficient. But that only works if you're the company who's kind of seen as the leader. And I would argue that most people would believe that TSMC is the one that's going to be coming out ahead in this, because according to reports that I even heard this week, they're looking to invest something like $100 billion in fab development and process spin-ups and things like that. I mean, we're already talking about who's going to be using their 2-nanometer process chips in the future. But Samsung makes a lot of chips. They just don't make them for laptops and phones. They make them for a lot of other things. And so that could be one of those things where TSMC has a clear leader advantage in the devices that we commonly think of as being high advanced tech. But Samsung could kind of come out of the background in areas like automotive and IoT and a lot of other kind of utility designs. So I think that this is going to be interesting to watch. But even more importantly, how is Intel going to respond to this? Are they going to continue to kind of use their own methodology for doing chiplet interconnects, and by farming out their fabrication operations, are they going to have people kind of writing to their specs as well, kind of making it a de facto standard, if not a de jure standard? Or are they going to embrace UCIe and try to get that as the, you know, primary mover advantage, especially for people who are manufacturing chips here in the US? Because that is another thing that we've talked about recently, is the fact that Intel is trying to be seen more or less as the big dog directly opposed to TSMC. But, you know, whereas TSMC is maybe more a little bit west, and TSMC is a little bit more east and Intel's a little bit more west. You know, we're starting to see things kind of cross-pollinate. Intel's opening more fabs in Europe. TSMC's trying to open fabs here in the US. So it could be a very interesting three-way battle at the top if Intel decides that they want to embrace UCIe, or maybe they'll just keep going it on their own. All right, we have some acquisition news, Max, because software intelligence company Dynatrace is set to acquire Runecast. Now, we saw Runecast before at Tech Field Day Extra, and they have an AI-powered platform that continuously monitors for misconfigurations and potential known issues in a lot of software that people use. It helps them keep their security footprint for exposures really low. Runecast has been a very popular solution for shops that are implementing VMware technologies. Dynatrace is looking to incorporate them into their contextual security platform to add posture management capabilities on top of everything else that they do. Does this make a Dynatrace a better solution overall?
Well, yes, I would think so. One thing first, I want to extend my congratulations once again to the Runecast team, very simply because I know all of the guys personally. The company is based in Brno, Czech Republic, so it's very close from where I live, actually. And I've been watching what they do. So, you know, you say the... First of all, at the very beginning, that Runecast is very popular with VMware shops. That's entirely true, because that's the roots of the company. It started with providing KB recommendations on how to best configure the environments. But the solution has really been growing over the years, and in a very quiet way, because it's not a company which has been really all out on marketing and doing things and that, but they've been really working on the code base, on the capabilities, and now they provide this kind of, you know, configuration drift assessments, compliance checks, recommendation for best practices, etc., and across several kind of environments. So we're talking about virtualized environment, we're talking about Kubernetes, cloud, and so on. So I do think that it is providing some key capabilities to the Dynatrace, you know, platform, to its ecosystem of solutions. And, you know, based on the press release, the Dynatrace leadership seems pretty much excited in terms of what Runecast is bringing on the table. It's really one of the solutions that I've been, you know, consistently recommending to people to have a look at. And I think it's great news for both companies. So, and now moving to a more, let's say, familiar topic to you. In other words, black magic to me, networking. Juniper Networks is putting more Marvis in everything. In a major announcement this week, they released several new products. One of those was expanding the Mist AI platform into Juniper Apstra to create more integration between the two acquisitions. With Apstra, you get intent-based networking, and with Mist, you get access to a virtual network assistant that can answer questions about issues or provide help with configuration. Tom, is adding AI to Apstra a big win for Juniper and for Mist?
I had to laugh when I saw this announcement because we obviously covered the big news that HPE is acquiring Juniper Networks probably later this year. So first and foremost, we know that that's coming, but not for a while. Anyone who's ever done any kind of major work on technology or had any kind of project going knows that they did not decide to add AI to the data center Apstra platform yesterday. They decided to do this 5-6 months ago. And I think that that's interesting to kind of see these two parallel tracks. On the one side, you've got a company that is very interested in what Juniper is doing, interested enough to buy them. On the other side, you've got Juniper just saying, we're going to do business as usual. And absent this other parallel track, so let's just forget about HPE for a minute. If you'd have asked me in November if I thought that they were ever going to put AI into Apstra's data center stuff, my response would have been an unqualified yeah, because it just makes sense. So think about the way that Mist has entered Juniper and basically taken the company over. Okay, yes, the carrier stuff is going to be there no matter what. But slowly what you're seeing is the mystification of everything inside of Juniper. Mist took over the wireless, which was a natural because that's what they bought them for. And then they took over the campus switching lines. And then it kind of invaded into the 128 Technologies acquisitions that became their SD-WAN portfolio. Well, what's left? Well, what's left is Apstra. It is their data center networking portfolio. So when you think about the way that those two things work, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because Apstra has been doing a great job of helping to do all kinds of data center intent-based networking automation, the things that you want a data center network to do. But those are still kind of opaque to people who need to go in and be able to do stuff like logging into a dashboard and seeing how your network's doing. Great. I'm staring at lights again. I was just having this conversation with somebody this week. Why is that light red? Well, I don't know. It's always been red. Well, do you think we all need to go figure out why it's red? I don't know. I'll have time. That's what Mist is trying to do, is they're trying to take the components of Marvis, their AI, and create what they're calling a virtual network assistant. Now, we've seen the virtual network assistant that Marvis provides for wireless in some previous mobility field day presentations. Like, you can go into the dashboard and you can just ask it, why is the wireless performance so bad in the Poughkeepsie office? And it will run through a list of things that it has determined. It's like, oh yeah, well, there's like a massive radio interference source, or your clients are misconfigured, or something like that. Things that you would expect, like the captain of the Enterprise to ask the computer, like, why is the warp core offline? You're not going to have Geordi going in and doing like a level 3 diagnostic on the warp core every 10 minutes to figure out what's wrong with it. The computer knows that the warp core is reporting an error. And so the computer is going to tell the person asking, the warp core says there's an error. Well, how do I fix that error? And that's the next step. So it's easy enough to tell me that something's wrong. What I don't know is how to fix it. And that's where the virtual network assistant is going to start to make a lot more sense, because it can take inputs from, common practices, from recommended documentation, and it can provide you the output. Now, here's the kicker. Today, it cannot do this by itself. Virtual network assistant, as it's written today, will not monkey with your network. It will make you go do it, which is a fail-safe when you think about it. I talked to somebody years ago who said, I don't want a script to push the big red button in the data center. I want a person to do it, because I can't yell at a script, but I can yell at a person. And so right now, CNA will say, well, here's what I think you should do. But, caveat implementor, make sure that you are checking to make sure that this isn't going to blow anything up or it doesn't go against your best practices. And the other thing too, and this is actually something that we got a sneak peek at during Mobility Field Day last year, is this idea of Marvis implementing LLM style communications and things like that. So one of the biggest problems that I have as a network engineer is the fact that I can never remember the stupid command to do the thing. And then I go Google, what is the command to do the thing? And I get 14 ads and 3 study groups, and nobody can remember the command to do the stupid thing. Well, when you train an LLM on your documentation, not on the internet, not on everybody's crazy, wacky conspiracy theory blog about why this command ends with an E instead of an I, you can actually say, what is the command to do the thing? And the LLM will spit out, this is the command. And here are all the switches. And this is how it's usually implemented. And that's valuable to me. So why is that light red? Well, that light's red because we're getting these 5 errors. Well, I know that I need to configure this to make those errors go away. What is the command? It's this. That makes it a whole lot easier, not just for me, who's forgetful, but for admins who have never done this before. And that's why I think that AI has a place in the data center. Yeah, it's not the Whopper, okay? All right, it's not Joshua from War Games. It's not going to start a global thermonuclear war because Ferris Bueller decided he wanted to do it. It is because it is getting way too complicated to manage these networks without some kind of filter in place to give me critical information without overwhelming me with a fire hose. And we've already done that in the wireless space, because wireless, believe it or not, is even more complicated than data centers. If you don't believe me, remember that Ethernet is a standard and it works the same way every time. And all I've got to do is park a microwave in the middle of a wireless deployment and I screw everything up. So by taking something that's extremely complicated and refining their AI algorithms so that they can give better answers, what Juniper Mist is doing is creating a platform that can then be implemented on multiple different places, like the data center. So now it's a software component that can travel wherever it needs to go. Now rewind the clock. Now HPE is going to own it at the end of the year, which means that the Marvis virtual network assistants that work on wireless, campus, and data center will now be able to be picked up and ported to all of HPE Aruba's networking gear. That's the value. They're going to sell a ton of this stuff before the acquisition happens. And when it happens and it gets integrated into GreenLake, they're going to sell a ton more of it. So I'm interested to see this. I can't wait to see it in action. Maybe we'll get to see them at an event sometime this year to learn a little bit more how it works. Call me, guys. All right, Max, the world of accelerators is about to open up to storage thanks to our friends over at the NVM Express Consortium. They define the standards for ultra-fast storage, and they've announced that they're going to be adding support for computational storage devices with a new framework and command sets to incorporate them into the standard. By adding support for on-device processors and off-device accelerator cards, NVMe is hoping to be a vendor-neutral option for those that are looking to reduce overhead and increase performance. Now, the vendors of those devices are hoping that by increasing support in the NVMe standard, it's going to drive more sales of those devices because they're kind of a niche solution right now. Max, do you think that by adding support for this hot new technology, computational storage, that it's going to help NVMe kind of still be the leader out there?
Well, I would say yes, but I'm saying something stupid. I would say it's a no. It's not really going to help it, because think about it. NVMe there is a standard, right? So we are looking at, let's put it that way, SSD drives. I mean, it's not necessarily SSD drive, but in general, NVMe flash, the way you access NVMe is more of a kind of a standard and a protocol. And we don't have anything better than that at the moment, right? The only thing we have better than that at the moment is DRAM. Or we have some kind of levels. You know, when Optane was retired by Intel, we had nothing else to kind of provide better performance than NVMe drives. So yes, we have some kind of elements of technology over there. But in general, it's not really impacting NVMe per se. And you said it very, very clearly before. All of those computational storage solutions are niche products. So to answer the first question, no, it's not a game changer, because NVMe flash is the best we have. Of course, you have TLC, you have QLC, and we're even seeing SLC and eventually MLC making a comeback, with some vendors using that as a kind of a replacement for Optane, right? But Why is it important and why is it interesting? It's important because until now, we had several computational storage solutions in the market. I'm thinking about our friends at NGD Systems. I'm thinking about the ScaleFlux folks and some others, all of them working to develop some kind of computational storage solutions. We've seen what they do. All of them are pretty much exciting. But as you said, they're a niche. And if you were to adopt one solution, well, most often you would have, if you were building applications on top of that, because those things are very, until now, they were heavily proprietary, right? So there was no real, let's say, command as a developer, if you were optimizing an application to write on computational storage, you didn't have a standard. You didn't have a kind of a programming interface or something which was standardized across the board. That means that you had either to select a choice to go with a given vendor or to think of an alternative option, you know, or develop specific interfaces for each of the technologies. Now, this is changing thanks to the SNEA. I've seen the contributions. There were some of our friends, people known in the industry, contributing to that. So I think it's a big advance and it's going to help things move forward. Now, why is that important? And even if these are niche products, very often those computational storage solutions are helping with databases, and they are helping also change the way you write data, right? So you're not just in a situation where you are providing storage with SSD drives or, you know, flash or NVMe, whatever you want, and you write data there. But the computational aspect is that you provide the data directly to the drive. You do the computation directly in the drive. That means that if you're writing on a database, for example, instead of writing data directly to a disk and you let the database and the CPU of the server handle the writes and so on, you're providing directly, let's say, database operations straight to the computational storage device, and it does the computation. The same goes for, let's say, more mundane use cases like data compression, for example. We were talking with ScaleFlux recently, and what they were telling us is that most of the compression operations that you're doing with x86 processors are using LZ4, if I'm not mistaken, while you don't have enough power to manage a gzip type kind of compression. When you're using the computational storage engine, you are able, because it's using ASICs or whatever dedicated chips, you're able to use gzip kind of compression, so you get a much better compression ratio. And at the same time, you're saving much more power and efficiency in offloading that kind of operation. So I'm going maybe a bit down the line, down the trench here, or down the rabbit hole, but that's what we're seeing. And it could be that the first wave of adoption of those technologies is in, improving the efficiency, you know, overall for writing and so on. But then you can think about more use cases. Some of the use cases, for example, with hyperscalers will be in-drive processing of data. Think about social media or whatever, things like that. Imagine you're posting something on Flickr or on TikTok or on Facebook. You upload your picture there. The picture is picked by the computational storage drive. It will probably generate thumbnails of that and compress and do all of this stuff and offload it from the compute. In effect, when you're operating at scale, it means much less power footprint because you can implement, let's say, lighter systems. For example, you don't need to go with high power or high-end processors in the system. You can get very simple cheap processors. You don't need to put maybe that much memory in the system, but the drives are the ones which are offloading and performing all the work. So I think that it's important. And a last comment on that as well. Some of those drives will also allow solutions, so vendors which are developing software-defined storage systems, it also allows them to improve their efficiency in terms of compression by offloading those, let's say, those activities from the system. So you don't need to purchase much more powerful x86 servers. You can install a few drives in there and let them handle the load.
All right, Max, we didn't have a closer look story this week, but I had one that I wanted to bring up just for fun, because if you're a fan of floppy disks, you might want to pour one out for the end times, because the government of Japan has finally announced that they are no longer going to require data submissions to be made on floppy disks or CD-ROMs. They were one of the last holdouts that required you to submit certain government information on our vaunted 3.5-inch floppy diskette. When reached for comment, they had no guidance on using zip disks or punch cards. So there might be hope for some old technology yet. All right. For those of you who are out there in our community wondering what we've got going on in the next few weeks, well, I'll tell you, because right now we're doing Cloud Field Day 19. We've got a great lineup of presenters, including companies like NeuroBlade and Soft Iron and Platform 9 today. So those presentations are going on right now at techfieldday.com. And there's a whole other presentation lineup going on tomorrow. And then next week, I'm going to be in Amsterdam for Cisco Live EMEA. We've got wonderful presentations coming from our friends at Cisco, as well as IP Fabric and NetBox Labs. We're going to be recording some roundtables and some podcasts and a whole bunch of fun stuff while we're there. So make sure that you are tuned in. Note that if you're in the U.S. time zone, you might be catching us at the end of the day. So make yourself a cup of coffee and tune in live. Otherwise, check out the YouTube channel for all of the great videos that we're going to be recording. And then February 21st through the 23rd is going to be AI Field Day 4. This event is so big, we have a three-day event going on with companies like Intel, Solidigm, VMware, Hammerspace, and more. So make sure you check out the Field Day website for the most up-to-date list of presenters. And then at the end of the month, February 28th and 29th, we are coming with you with a very special Leap Day edition of Networking Field Day. I'll be in Silicon Valley, and we'll be hearing from companies like Nile and Aviz Networks and more. So if you want to check out the website for that list of up-to-date presenters, we'd love to have you tune in for that on the 28th and the 29th. Max, if people want to learn a little bit more about some of the cool stuff that you're working on, where can they go to learn that?
Yeah, thank you, Tom, for that. So you can check out our content at techunplugged.io/blog. I'm back on X after having left Twitter, so you can find me at Max Portillaro. And stay tuned for some exciting news about what's up on LinkedIn. You can follow me there as well, Max Motilaro. Thank you.
And speaking of which, we're on all the social media platforms as Gestalt IT and Tech Field Day. If you spin up a new social platform, please make sure to let us know so we can go out there and get our name reserved. But we're on Mastodon, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it now. And, you know, just about anything you can think of. And while we're there, we will be publishing links to the rundown episodes that we put out every Wednesday around 12:30 Eastern time, including show notes and linked articles on our website at gestaltit.com, videos on our YouTube channel, which is Gestalt IT Video, and podcasts. So if you search for the Gestalt IT Rundown in your favorite podcast application of choice, you can catch the dulcet tones of myself and my friend Max reading you the news and possibly cracking a joke or two here or there. You never know what might happen. We will be back next week with a special on-site episode from Cisco Live EMEA. So make sure you tune in for me and one of my wonderful co-hosts reading you the news as we eat Stroop waffles and probably wear some of those adorable clogs. We're not going to wear those. But we might be enjoying some refreshments at the end of a long work day. Until next week, when we bring you our on-site episode, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy the waning hours of your January, and we'll see you next month in February.